Welcome to the Golden State Media Concepts College Football Podcast, your ticket to all things college football. Are you looking to get your college football fix? Looking to get the latest news on your favorite school's team? Join us as we talk college football from the national championship to college rivalries to bowl games to the Heisman Trophy to which conference is the best. We've got you covered for the Big Ten, SEC, Big 12, Pac-12. ACC, and everything in between.
What is up? Welcome to the GSMC Football Podcast, the college football edition on a Wednesday today here. My name is Tom Doherty. As always, this podcast is brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. As we have some stuff to get to today, obviously everything coming off that Urban Meyer thing, we're going to let that be, as it's obviously nothing really came out since Monday new, as we're just basically in this investigation. And we're going to wait for it to run its course. And then what will happen will happen. A lot of people will think that he's done. A lot of people think he's going to be out of a job. I think that he lied. He lied to the Big Ten media members. He lied to the national media members at Big Ten Media Day. He said that he didn't have or wasn't in the right frame of mind, or wasn't prepared to answer the question correctly. Well, you said three false statements in one sentence. You said you never discussed it. You said it never came up, and you said that you didn't know anything about the issue in 2015. When Zach Smith, of course, then goes on ESPN and talks for however long he talked for that weird interview, that was very just kind of disturbing, honestly, because he just was, you could tell with the frame of mind of that, what that guy's got going on between the ears. But no, that's, we'll let that lie as it is. That was just kind of I don't even really take that much stock in his interview. It's just white noise, honestly. But you know, the Urban Meyer comes out and says, I failed on July 24th during the media days. And my explanation, well, you literally said false statements, and then you're coming out and saying, because your lawyer is trying to get you to articulate correctly now, and you come up with this big letter that, I mean, the chances that he wrote that letter are slim to none. I mean, maybe helped draft it a little bit, or just here, Urban, sign this. It's just interesting. Kind of a head shaker. I mean, do you want to see him coach there anymore? Do you think if he doesn't get fired, is he going to have this Johnny Raincloud over the whole season? I mean, obviously they're expected to be the third best team in the entire country this year. It could end up being one of the, if not better than that. I mean, it's tough to get up top of Clemson and Alabama. Clemson's pretty darn good this year. Honestly, we're going to get to that eventually in this show here when we get to this. I give you my fall camp updates and the storylines for the season and how Clemson might actually be better off than Alabama this season because of the depth that they have on both sides of the ball. But we'll get to that in a moment. Just going to continue on with this Urban Meyer stuff a little bit here, just briefly to start off the show. Do you want to see him fired? Do you want to see Gene Smith fired? That's the athletic director at the Ohio State University. I mean, if Urban Meyer is then now coming out and saying that he handled the 2015 incident with the protocols that he was supposed to, and then now we have reports that we've had reports out that there was no conversation with Courtney Smith, there was no interview or does at all coming to talk to the accuser of these incidents in 2015, and now they that just points if they didn't talk to her, If Urban Meyer knew about it, Shelly Meyer talks to him about it. He calls in Zach Smith to talk to him about it. He denies it, but then maybe he comes out and finally gets it out of the guy and it's like, yeah, this is what happened. And then he goes out, go at it through proper channels, proper protocol, passes up the flagpole. He's a football coach. There's other people above him that are going to handle disciplinary action. And Gene Smith just kind of lets it go and says, I don't want to deal with this. We don't need another scandal at Ohio State. Let's keep this in-house. And we're just going to kind of see what happens. I mean, what do you expect? It's 2015 then. It's 2018 now. Things are going to happen. I mean, there are, of course, other circumstances like, okay, why did it take 3 years for Courtney Smith to finally say something? Now that he's finally been fired. And he was fired because he violated a protection order that was finally granted to you this year. Actually, not even, I think he violated the protection order like the day or the day after it was granted. So then he was, it was then let go by the university. I mean, just the craziest thing of all this, of the entire saga slash scandal slash transgression of lies and deceitfulness. Is the fact that the guy's a freaking wide receiver coach. it just makes me laugh a little bit. Like, really, Urban Meyer? You're going to do this over a wide receiver coach? You're going to have I'm not going to be the one. There's people out there, oh, he's tarnished. His legacy is done. We're all going to remember. Mm-hmm. If nothing happens, our media cycle is way too fast. If he doesn't get fired, if he gets suspended, say he gets suspended for the first three games, they win all those games because they're against the cupcake teams. He comes back for Big Ten play, goes and wins a few more games. Oh, we're in week four of the NFL season. you're gonna think about this? I mean, you will, but you're gonna really give a big, oh, he should have been fired. Well, if anything, Gene Smith's probably gonna get fired, because if Urban passed it up to his higher ups, they were supposed to deal with the situation and it wasn't dealt with, no conversation was had with Courtney Smith, then that goes to show you that's it right there. Point blank period. Done right there. That it was a cover up by people above Urban Meyer. He only could do, I'm sorry, football coaches coach football. You're not an NFL head coach where you have a lot of overreaching power in the program in your organization, along with the GM and the owner. That's kind of a three pronged thing. You have an owner, a GM, and a head coach. Maybe a VP of player personnel, a team president. In college, you got boosters. You got a university president who has to deal with his own meetings and things like that with the university. You have an AD who has, well, Ohio State, what, 25, 30 different sports he's got to oversee, and the football coach, and probably some football people in between Gene Smith and Urban Meyer who handle just the football aspect of it for Ohio State. I mean, this is royalty in college football. This is like the, basically, I don't want to compare here, but like you have Michigan and Ohio State. It's kind of like Niners and Cowboys in college football. It's just the way. Notre Dame, you can throw them in there if you want to be the royalty of football. But this is historic royalty. I mean, Alabama was good, and they weren't very good, and they got good again when Nick Saban came back. Florida, I mean, no. This is Big Ten football, Notre Dame football, all that kind of stuff. That's football royalty. And Ohio State's very much instilled into all of that. And it's really interesting to see how this is all going to go forward, because there is a lot more problems here. It's not just Urban Meyer. It really isn't. Obviously, Zach Smith has issues. He needs to go get handled. I don't want to absolve Courtney Smith of anything. She took 3 years to come out and finally had to go do some media grab to get attention and then push this all into view. I mean, if you really ever having issues, don't let yourself get swayed in 2009. I know, oh, Thomas is short sighted. She was pressured. Yeah, she was pressured. Some big names back in 2009, and then you don't get out, and it's 2015 rolls around, and you're having abuse and problems happening in your house, and just, I don't know. I'm not, believe me, there's people out there who are like, oh, she's asking for it, oh, she's doing this. Nope, no, I'm not going to say any of that. No, that's not what's happening, but there is a sense of safety that you want to have in your life. especially if you're if everything is true that she's saying, and he's choking her against the wall with her kids clinging to her legs. How long did it take you to get a protection order? 9 years after the initial 2009 incident, and then you finally dropped the charges, and then you called the cops multiple other times after that and never pressed charges. I mean, if he's really doing something, then you should do something for yourself. Help yourself out. I mean, I know that there's a lot of stigmas and everything like that, but big picture. And now you're going to use the media to try and get some name drop and get some headlines going your way. Well, it is what it is, and maybe drag down a legendary coach. I mean, I'm not saying, believe me, Urban Meyer, yes, while he is a successful coach, he doesn't have a clean record by any right. He had 31 players at Florida get arrested. He was Aaron Hernandez's coach. I mean, this is a guy who's, I'm not going to, believe me, I mean, Aaron Hernandez thing is a completely different story. I can't put that on Urban Meyer. That's a different story. But still, he was there with all those guys, and it was definitely an interesting little program going down in Florida right there. And then you had the other dichotomy of it is the fact that you had Jesus on earth, Mr. I'm going to kneel down and take a prayer. Tim Tebow on that team as well, but yeah, it is what it is. That was in Florida. Now he's at Ohio State, a school that I never really saw him fit in there, and he never really felt like Florida Ohio State to me. I mean, I always kind of matched him up with the Florida, you know, just thought of him when it comes to Florida. He didn't really look like he was in place there either. I don't know. He doesn't look like your normal football coach to me. I don't know. But it doesn't matter. It's an optics thing. This is more of a actions thing. And if you think that he covered it up, I don't know if covered it up is the right word. But did they do their hardest due diligence to try and figure it out? No. Because when you have in-house problems, you're kind of in denial in yourself, then you have a tendency to half-ass things and not go full bore on an investigation. Obviously now you get some other outside people going on this investigation, and it works out a little, it's going to work out a little differently, I think. I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised whatsoever if this investigation concludes and they find that Urban Meyer wasn't really at a fault. I mean, if it was more of a systemic thing of the university fabric in itself, I'd find that much more reasonable, I think, and much more. I would not be surprised at all if that was what kind of worked. In my whole comparison, to an NFL team, obviously, an NFL team, you're dealing with paid athletes. These are all, you're dealing with professional athletes. You're dealing with all these coaches. They're all making a lot of money. Versus in college, the coaches are the high profile. It is a coaches league in college football. At most professional sports, it's all about the players. Obviously, coaches get a big, in the NFL, there's a lot of high profile coaches as well. But in college, the turnover is too much and too great. Urban's been there since 2011. He's won a national championship, and that could save his job. I mean, he's only lost 8 games. What's he, like 42-8 or something like that? In his time at Ohio State, so there's a reason why Bob Stoops I don't know, like, I'm not going to speculate on to what the contract negotiation were going, or some sort of communication between the university and Bob Stoops to try and see if he was interested in replacing Urban Meyer if necessary. But I'm thinking that those might be put on hold, obviously, during the investigation, you think. And then, of course, if things were to transpire negatively for Urban Meyer, then you probably would see the university get involved in that. My question is, if it is a systemic issue and the university is found at fault wholly, is there going to be sanctions? Are we going to have sanctions involved? This is not quite, obviously, I mean, I don't think so, because Penn State had sanctions put down for Sandusky's stuff, and they were actually taken off, so I don't think we're going to get that far, but this is a problem. believe me, we've had domestic violence in the news a lot with in sports, connected to sports. It's not something we want to see in our sports. Obviously, it's not something we want to see at all anywhere in the news. And it's something that unfortunately happens in this country. And Zach Smith's got to go get some help, and I hope he does, because Everybody has a chance to make a second to have a second chance, and or maybe a third or fourth chance for him, but or not. He can go figure himself out. But Urban Meyer, I'm thinking if I was to put a percentage on it, maybe 60-40 he's good. Maybe even 70-30 he's good, because I really do think that it's going to be put on more of a whole in the university than just him himself, especially if he's telling the truth this time around, saying that he went and followed the correct protocol after the incident in 2015 that he actually did know about and discussed with Zach Smith about, in order to try and get out ahead of it at least, or deny it, or whatever they were going to do about it. All right. That'll wrap it up for the segment. We'll come back after the break, and actually, I'm done with this Urban Meyer stuff. We're going to get into some QB battle stuff. They're happening all over the country, as well as fall camp news and some storylines coming into the season. So everybody stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Are you looking for help for your fantasy football team? Check out the GSMC Fantasy Football Podcast. Get today's best advice on who to start, who to sit, even who you should draft. From sleeper picks to red-hot lineups, they got it all covered for you. That's gsmcpodcast.com/fantasy-football-podcast. We'll cover traditional leagues, dynasty, PPR, even IDP leagues. When you need fantasy help, there's just one show to hit up. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
All right, welcome back to GSMC Football Podcast on a Wednesday today here. As we're going to get into some stuff regarding the QB competitions as they're kind of happening all around the country. We went over, obviously we know the big one is at Alabama. There's more going on. LSU, USC, UCLA, Texas A&M, Texas, Florida, all of them. Ohio State, even Georgia. I mean, Georgia, not really, because Jake Fromm is coming off of a national championship appearance in his freshman year. But yeah, they have the number one quarterback in the 28th out of the 2018 recruiting class. So that's Justin Fields, and he's at Florida. I mean, at Georgia, and yeah, he wants to play too. So I'll try and see if Kirby Smart's going to have to deal with that one. Obviously. Not a bad problem to have, actually, because, I mean, if you are looking for a quarterback, you like to have a couple different ones to choose from, because just in case somebody gets hurt, or it is what it is, works for you if you got some options. All right, going over this stuff regarding Alabama, the whole the Tua versus Jalen, and how the media is handling this is really interesting, because I'm seeing reports out that this is like the hardest decision that Urban Meyer's ever made. I'm getting reports out to say this is an easy decision, because you already made the decision back on July 6th or whatever it was, when they won the national championship. But, you know, I think that you obviously have to make a decision between a guy who has played a sixth, a fifth of the snaps that that Jalen Hurts has played. And for a head coach, that could be hard. That could be hard to try and move along, because you know that you have a guy who's put the work in, is a veteran presence in that locker room, and versus a guy who is going to set. I mean, I don't know. I feel like the risk reward is worth it with Tua. I've always said that I think Tua is going to get it because of that very risk award, and the fact that you have the ceiling is so high versus Jalen has reached the ceiling. He has. As a quarterback, I believe he's reached the ceiling. Tua has already shown in this small sample size that he has the ability to drive the ball down the field. He's got the touch. He has the ability to extend plays. I mean, Jalen can do that. The last thing, the extending plays out with his legs, but he's not been shown the ability to reset his feet, to reestablish a launch point, to try and get the ball down the field, or at least show that touch around the sideline. He hasn't been able to do that. He couldn't really move the ball that much at all through the air against Georgia, and that was why you saw Nick Saban make that move to put Tua in and get the ball moving down the field more. I mean, Alabama has never really been your big passing team anyways. Obviously, they've had receivers. They've had some good receivers too, believe me, but they never really have been your big throw it down the field 50 times team. Has been relying on their running backs, using the running game, being balanced on the attack. And I think that when you have a guy like Tua Tagovailoa, he can really work that out better, because Jalen, obviously, they both have the threat to run. But Jalen, you can kind of make him be more one-dimensional when he plays quarterback. You saw what happened against Georgia. He became really one-dimensional, where he was really just kind of running those little sweep plays, looking down the field, and if he didn't see anything in a few seconds, he'd just take off and get a few yards. And that wasn't really working very well, because Georgia has a guy named Roquan Smith, or had one, and he was able to go and make those plays along the edges. So, I mean, if you want to go out and see Tua sling the ball around, I think he's a little more threat. And the more threats you have, the more you thin out the defense. If the defense, if the safeties can creep up and they don't have to worry about Jalen Hurts throwing over their heads or anybody running by them, they can creep up. They can play aggressively in the running game as well, play downhill in the ball versus Tua Tagovailoa. If you're those safeties, you have to be true to the play, because he can very easily run play action. You jump on that running game, you jump on the play action, now you've bitten, and you're toasted. Because all it takes is a quarter, a half step, a quarter step bite on those play action plays, or maybe a couple yards just running in pre-snap if you think it's a running play, and that receiver is going to be by you. Calvin Ridley would be by you. Obviously, he's not there anymore, but he still got his brother. His brother plays for Georgia, right? Yeah, the Ridley brother plays for Georgia. That's funny. They played against each other. That's right. They played against each other in the championship game. But yeah, so yeah, somebody. I'm sure there's gonna be that. We've had three. No, this is Calvin Ridley. We'll see I don't know if he's gonna have quite the career. But he's not. If he's gonna find out, he's gonna be on the same team as Julio Jones, actually. So there you go. And you obviously Amari Cooper over in Oakland as your other top receiver to come out of Alabama lately. So it is interesting. We're gonna see what's gonna happen. I think it is one of the biggest decisions Nick Saban's ever made. Obviously, it's not set in stone. He could put Jalen Hurts in, and Jalen could have a rough quarter or a rough half or even a rough game, and they could still win with their running game and with their defense. And then you could say, I didn't like what I saw from Jalen. We're going to go with Tua, and that's it. That's all it takes. I don't think you're going to. The only problem is then you have some expediting circumstances outside that, with whether it's team attitude on the move or people have rallied around Jalen Hurts. Because, I mean, we've already heard Nick Saban. I've talked about it on the show. Nick Saban said that he wants to see whoever gets the job win the job from the team. They want the team to be won over by the quarterback that is going to lead this team. And, I mean, yeah, you're putting pressure on 20, 22, 23-year-old guys, some 19-year-olds as well, to really kind of pick your play. I don't want to say play favorites, because it's not playing favorites. You're picking a leader, basically. And but it could be difficult, because they could be liking both. They could like both those guys. They could have relationships with both of them, and they're just young kids. And you're the coach, Nick, Coach Saban. You could pay a lot of money to make these decisions. Why don't you make the decision? But I don't know. It's just Tom. He just said it to the media to get him to be quiet. He didn't actually mean it like that. Well, it's possible. Nick Saban could have just said that. Oh, they have to win the team. It's a kind of a cliche statement. It's probably possible, because it is a cliche statement. But also, I kind of believe that he wants that to happen, because the best case scenario, the team is definitive, and it feels much more comfortable being led by Tua versus being led by Jalen, or vice versa. Worst case scenario, the team is split, and you have half the offense likes this guy, and half the offense likes this guy, or the receivers like this guy, and the offensive line likes this guy, or whatever it might be. Then you have a problem on your hands, and you have to have some conversations. But fortunately, I feel like in Alabama, that program has such a culture instilled in there. They know it's like a very business-like attitude in those facilities. And I think if their coach really wanted them to make a decision, they would come together and make a decision on who they want to lead them, or at least show during practice who they get rally behind more as a whole. So that should make Nick Saban's decision a little bit easier for sure. Out in L.A., actually, so you have Wilton Spate transfer to UCLA, and he's not even, I think, in the top two of actually getting decided on, because you have Devin Monster out there who likely will be the starter. He's been kind of groomed underneath Josh Rosen. He's shown the ability to play in a similar kind of system as Chip Kelly. Obviously, Chip Kelly will be able to get the most out of anybody, I think, especially if you got some speed. Chip Kelly can use you pretty much in his schemes, because you saw what they did in Oregon. DeAnthony Thomas was really, really good. Obviously, he's playing, he was able to play the next level. So, and same thing with LaMichael James. Remember LaMichael James? I mean, he didn't really last that long in the NFL, but he's good. He was good in Oregon. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do. I thought that maybe it'd be an easy Dorian Thompson Robinson was going to be able to really have a shot at getting this job. Devin Monster is also being considered, along with Wooden Spade also. And looks like the Monster is the favorite in the clubhouse, or at least on the field, as they still are going to be going through their fall practices. But we're under a month away. This is a short-term decision kind of thing. We knew we were going to have to make these decisions. At least the coaches probably did for a long time, but now it's kind of getting to the point where they have to start making one. And if you watch like any football show or any like Hard Knocks or any type of behind the scenes workings on coaches, they have a tendency to wait till the last possible minute and then evaluate everything as a whole, which isn't the worst thing to do. Honestly, it's not a bad tactic. But I think Chip Kelly coming in there in his first year, Wilton Spade does not match his. That's not the quarterback you want to use in your offense that you're trying to instill there for the first year. I think you're going to probably get the most out of Mostert, who definitely has the ability to run, and then Dorian Thompson Robinson will still be there for your future, because he's just a youngster. I think he's going to be either an incoming freshman or a redshirt freshman. So I can double check that one. Yeah. So I mean, that's at UCLA. The best one I think is at LSU, actually. Other than USC. USC, I'm sorry, Matt Fink. I'm sorry, Jack Sears. I know you were there all day, all year during spring practice, but did you watch the guy's tape? Have you seen JT Daniels play football? Have you seen how excited the coaches get when they found out that he was going to be available to come this year instead of having to wait a whole other year? They got him on campus ASAP, Rocky. He was on that campus working with those coaches, looking at studying the playbook, all the kind of stuff, like ASAP. He didn't even wait till he graduated. I mean, did he graduate his junior year early? Like, he was there already in the spring of this year. So, like, he wasn't working out with the team, but he was at least in the offices with the in the quarterback room with the coaches. So, I mean, he could have been finishing up his. Obviously, he graduated a year early, but he could have graduated a year and a half early. Interesting, but no, this guy's been touted as the next. I mean, of course, you always want to give the tag as the next best player. So, next Tom Brady. If Zion Williamson at Duke is the next LeBron, then you think JT Daniels at USC is the next Tom Brady? It could be. Tom Brady was. I think about quarterbacks. Look at the top quarterbacks in our league right now in the NFL. Just quickly, a little NFL, the last minute here. Just trying to, because these comparisons are hilarious. Tom Brady went to Michigan, didn't have the best career. Drew Brees went to Purdue. Ben Roethlisberger went to Miami of Ohio. Phillip Rivers went to NC State. I'm pretty sure. I'm double checking that, but I'm pretty darn sure he went there. Eli Manning went to Ole Miss, even though he's not really a top quarterback anymore. Aaron Rodgers went to a junior college before going to Cal. Aaron Rodgers went to Butte Community College, just east of Chico, and then went to Cal Berkeley. I'm trying to think here. I mean, obviously, all the other guys, maybe obviously Marcus Mariota the younger players, obviously. I mean, you look at Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz went to South Dakota, right? South Dakota State. I don't want. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was South Dakota State, not North Dakota State. I always get those mixed up. But yeah, they can come from everywhere. So just because you went to USC, I mean, USC quarterbacks honestly have had kind of. There's been literally one. One USC quarterback has had a whole career success, and his name is Carson Palmer, and he just is finally retiring now, but that's it. Martin Leinart, Mark Sanchez, he had a good defense for like 2 years, and that's why they were actually decent. And then Matt Barkley, nope. Matt Leinart, I said Matt Leinart, nope. I mean, just, yeah. John David Booty, really? Really go there? So, JT Daniels, can you make it? Can you change the trend? Maybe you're the next Carson. I think the best, better comparison. Maybe he's the next Carson Palmer. There you go. That's not a bad thing. He won the Heisman Trophy, so you never know. All right, that'll wrap it up for this segment. We'll come back after the break and do some more talk on our storylines for the fall camps, as that's what we'll probably be doing for the rest of the show. So, everybody, stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Check out the show that's built on the MMA. From the UFC to extreme cage fighting, they got the fights covered. Check out the GSMC MMA podcast. Get the latest news on past or upcoming fights. Join us as we talk to and about some of the biggest names in the MMA, past, present, and future. When it's the fight game, there's just one show to check out. GSMCpodcast.com/MMA-podcast. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
All right, welcome back to GSMC Football Podcast on a Wednesday today here. As we were talking about some quarterback competitions, there was one I was actually trying to allude to before I sidetracked myself and went on my little JT Daniels rant. But the other one that's really compelling, actually, and this is a team that is looking to get back into the conversation in the SEC, and that's LSU. And they... whether it's a coaching situation that they kind of are just kind of getting through this whole post Les Miles thing, and Ed Orgeron is the guy they like, and Ed Orgeron is the guy that's there. And while some people think that he might not be the best X's and O's guy, he's definitely a hype guy. He's an energy guy. He's a hype guy. He's going to get your players ready to go. And Joe Burrow is there now, and Joe Burrow has shown a lot of talent, and Joe Burrow has shown a lot of potential. Playing at Ohio in the time he was able to get on the field at Ohio State. Obviously, once he kind of figured that it was the job was leaning towards Dwayne Haskins, he was able to get his transfer worked out, a graduate transfer to go over to LSU. And now he's the favorite to win that job. So the two guys that were there already before are probably not too happy. Can't be too happy about that, obviously. But, you know, I think you probably understand. Like, yeah, we're going to get a top guy from a top university, and he's going to be helping us out this season. And whether, I mean, bring on the challenge, or kind of like, you know, we wanted to go at this our own way. It is what it is, and it's probably tough tiddly. Yeah, I said tough tiddly. Tough tiddly LSU quarterbacks. And sorry, because... I think Joe Burrow is going to come in and be Mr. Studio Job. Oh, Mr. Studio Job. There you go. It's the one time you hear me sing on there. But, you know, LSU quarterback situation is quite interesting because I think Joe Burrow is probably your best option. I think that he's probably your best option because you didn't really have anything. And, I mean, obviously, Joe Burrow is exciting fans, and fans, they just want to win. I don't think it's not like, oh, my God, you're unseating a legendary quarterback. You came out of nowhere. What do you do? What's going on? Our quarterback? No, they don't really know who this. Who are the other two guys? I mean, I know the names of the other two guys at. I'm pretty sure at Texas. I know Sam Ellinger and I can't remember the other guy's name. I know the two guys. I know the two guys at USC that are going to be probably SOL basically. But so it looks like that at LSU. I mean, Burrow transfer to LSU. You have Danny Etling was the quarterback last year. So looking at looking at this LSU transfer, Burrow's comments on this was like, well, I came here to play. I didn't come here to sit on the bench for 4 years. I'm a pretty good quarterback. I want to play somewhere. And yeah, he is a pretty good quarterback. You've seen some of his tape. And he's kind of sat and waited. I guess he sat and waited for a while behind JT Barrett and kind of was an unknown guy. So, I mean, yeah, he spent the last three seasons as a backup for Ohio State. And you even saw the thing is Miles Haskins, when JT Barrett got hurt, Miles Haskins was the guy who played last year. So Joe Burrow even had a wait about that. So it looks like that you're going to have at a school that's touted some of the best NFL players in the league. I mean, they've had some great defensive players, some receivers out of there. That's kind of the wide receiver university where you have Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry. All of there. Ruben Randall was a receiver. So, I mean, they've had some different options there at LSU, and they haven't really been able to do much on the offensive side. And because I mean, I think it's a quarterback situation, and finally they're going to get a quarterback in there that's not Zach Mettenberger. Sorry, yeah, no, he's all right, or Brandon Harris or Danny Etling or anything like that. So you're going to get a guy like a Joe Burrow in there too. To try and actually work that out right and get LSU back to where they want to go this season. So that's pretty good for LSU. I mean, there's the other ones going on. Texas, I don't know what Tom Herman's going to have to do. I think why can't Tom Herman find a guy? Where's Tom Herman's guy? Where's his quarterback? You can't go around around high school and find a quarterback? A top quarter. You're the head coach of the Texas Longhorns. Go recruit, baby. Come on, go recruit. What? Why are you still dealing with Sam Ellinger and the other guy whose last name I can't pronounce? I think it's Bushiel or something like that. I don't want to wreck his last name, but I mean, it's just ridiculous. Why you can't? I mean, you had the best quarterback in Texas college history go to A&M and then transfer to Oklahoma and not go to your school. It just make any sense. Looking at these quarterbacks, it's Shane Bushiel. I'm pretty sure that's how you spell it. It's not Bushili. It could be, I guess. And then Sam Ellinger as well. So, I mean, it looks like Ellinger has kind of got that, is sitting in the number one spot, and nobody really, I mean, I don't know if anybody, is anybody really going to be the one to take that away from him? I don't know. They kind of, it was definitely a split action last year, as the Shane Belushi is the, Bushiel is the junior, 6'1", 205, Sam Ellinger, sophomore, 6'2", 230, and then you also have Cameron Rising. As maybe this is the quarterback I'm talking about. He's from Newberry Park, California, 6'2", 209, as well as Casey Thompson from Newcastle, Oklahoma, 6'1", 104. So if Cameron Rising is the guy that's going to rise on up through the ranks and take that job maybe, or it's going to be a guy who was already there before Tom Herman got there, it might will remain to be seen. It is Texas. I think I don't really care. Honestly, I could care less if Texas plays well or not because the Big 12 is not my favorite. But I feel like college football is better when Texas plays well. It's better when USC plays well. It's better than when Notre Dame plays well. Obviously, we have a lot of our historic schools. I mean, Nebraska. Nebraska's going to be back on the old map. Obviously, they get Scott Frost in there, and they have a quarterback competition going on a little bit as well. There's ones that are much more kind of you could see the ending of it. You can see the decision kind of out in the future sitting out there instead of Alabama. Where it's like, I don't know, toss a coin. Who is it going to be? I think just Adrian Martinez looks like that is going to be, or maybe Tristan Gebbia will likely be the guy who gets the job, as Gebbia looked really good during the spring game. But obviously, these coaches are not in any rush to name a starting quarterback. Whether they need to do it before the last week of the spring or the fall practice, or the second to last week of fall practice, they probably have an idea in their head of what is the best, what's the, basically their cutoff time to make a decision. And at least, because you could tell a guy privately, hey, I don't want to look at this up. We're not releasing this to the media yet, but I'm going to tell you right now, we're going to go with you to be the starting quarterback, or we're going to go with the other guy to be the starting quarterback. So they can kind of let people know in house without releasing it to the media very easily, obviously. But no, these days with college sports and college football the way it is, and the media game that it is, and even got me talking about it 3 days a week, which is great. I mean, honestly, it's great. We're getting into the point right now where we're going to have a lot to talk about. Obviously, the Urban Meyer stuff we don't like to talk about, but it's there, and we kind of have to do our comments on it. But college football is going to be in full swing pretty soon here. We're going to have we have some really, really cool storylines to get to in the next segment. I'm going to kind of highlight a lot of them now as we mean. We can start it off now. There's a bunch of them to get to, as each top 20. I mean, we'll go through most of the top 25 with these storylines. But I mean, obviously, the one we were just talking about with Nebraska and their quarterback, that's not the storyline. The storyline is Scott Frost and getting Nebraska back to the prowess that it once was at in the 90s that you saw. And there's definitely a way to do that. And part of that is coaching. It's coaching, and Scott Frost definitely what he was able to do at UCF is very, very encouraging, and is something that a Nebraska Cornhuskers fan has got to be really excited for, because he could do that very easily at Nebraska. All right. Looking around here, I mean, these storylines, obviously Alabama loses. Their main issue for this season is they're going to probably be their secondary, and trying to figure out how to way to retool that, as they did get a bunch of, obviously, Minkah Fitzpatrick is gone in the draft as well. They're going to have a couple of true freshmen in there. Patrick Surtain Jr., Josh Joby, will they be step in and make an impact? That's probably be something that you'd hope, obviously. But, I mean, coaches, obviously, they're going to have a bunch of guys in there probably that they could handpick. And whoever's playing the best, you throw in there. And if a guy, you need to rotate a guy out. It's a next man up mentality at Alabama. And they've been able to do that for a long time. So, the secondary lost every major piece that it needed, especially Minkah Fitzpatrick, to the draft last season. Clemson, they don't really have an issue. They're pretty buttoned up. Their defense is going to be lights out. They have a good problem to have with Kelly Bryant and the Trevor Lawrence situation, quarterback. I mean, if you're Hunter Johnson, you're like, yeah, deuces. I understand that. But, I mean, whether it's going to be Bryant, whether it's going to be Lawrence, I mean, it's just, it doesn't matter. This team is going to be a powerhouse. They're going to roll through the ACC schedule. Their main issue right now is maybe adding a tight end or getting another weapon down the field for a quarterback in a play-action scenario, or maybe just adding some sort of a guy who can stay in and block and be a versatile guy. Right now they have a guy named Milan Richard. He returns. He's the most experienced. They also have a guy, Garrett Williams, and the freshman, Braden Galloway, as well, of that position. So whether they're looking for a guy to stay in a more block, give Kelly Bryant some more help, or be another weapon down the field, remains to be seen. But that team, I mean, if that's your issue, you're sitting pretty good right now. And the Clemson Tigers are definitely doing that. If you're Trevor Lawrence, I just hang out. Like, dude, I know I'm gonna play. He's a senior. I got 3 years ahead of me in this for this team, or 2 years if you want to leave after junior year, of course. But if I was Trevor Lawrence, I would not. I mean, obviously, you're chomping at the bit to play. You want to get on the field, but I would not be in any rush. You want to try and give Kelly the most support you can give. Let him finish out his career. He's a talented guy. But then again, if you're there, you're ready. You just kind of keep that very even-keeled, calm, mindset in your head where you're just like, I'm just going to let this roll out. I'm ready to go. I know I'm prepared. I know that my body is the way I want it to be. I know that I have the skills that I need to succeed. But this guy is the starter right now. Coach made a decision. I'm going to respect coach's decision, and I'm just going to be there waiting in the wings and be the biggest support. And that's the kind of the mentality you have to have as a backup quarterback, or as like maybe the next man up, as a guy who's being groomed or whatever kind of word you want to use. I mean, we have a lot of that situation in the NFL, actually. You don't get it as much in college because we have all these quarterback competitions going on, and you rarely have a guy being groomed really in college underneath another starter. So, all right, everybody. I mean, actually, this might happen in Georgia as well with Justin Fields. But I mean, the thing is, instead of having a senior and a freshman, it's a sophomore and a freshman, and that can be kind of an issue. All right, that'll wrap it up for this segment. We'll come back after the break and finish it off with the rest of these storylines from the college football world, especially. So everybody stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC to the extreme cage fighting, we got the fights covered.
Listen.
It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to. The Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
Welcome back to GSMC Football Podcast, the college football edition on a Wednesday today here, middle of the week talk, as we are covering some storylines coming into the season, looking at some fall practice stuff, as everybody is in a full swing of practice right now at their respective campuses around the country. I mean, we're getting closer and closer, folks, as we are under a month away from college football. Of course, the first week of college football, always the week ahead of the first week of the NFL. And then college football does a great job of making sure we get some good games scheduled for week one and some good neutral field games. We have a good field. We have actually the Notre Dame-Michigan game, I think, is at Notre Dame. It's not a neutral field game. That's going to be a good one. The Washington-Auburn game probably will be the marquee matchup of the weekend, as it is the highest two preseason ranking teams going against each other. As I think Auburn's around number, I think they're 9 against number 6, Washington. So that's going to be a good one from Dallas. So Arlington and at a Cowboys or AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. Then you have Alabama and LSU, and then I think Alabama and Louisville. LSU is playing Miami, and then who is playing Florida? Somebody's playing Florida State. I think it's Texas A&M. I think somebody's playing Florida State on the opening day. Football schedule. I've looked at their schedule. How many times did I look at the dang schedule? Probably a million times. They play Virginia Tech. Okay, well, that's actually a conference game to start off the season. Somebody's playing Texas A&M. Maybe it's Florida. No. Nope. Oh, they're playing Clemson, and that's actually week two. Okay, so they don't start off. The Clemson-Texas A&M game is week two. Okay, I knew there was one big matchup in week two, and that's it. All right, cool. All right, so going into continuing our storylines for the year, as we were left off on, actually, we only got through a couple different schools. We're now on Ohio State, and of course, the Ohio State stuff, the big elephant in the room, the future of Urban Meyer, that becomes the storyline for Ohio State, when I think the storyline should have been the transition from JT Barrett to Myles Haskins, and seeing if you can have a seamless transition and see if you can try and obviously get revenge
I don't know. You're going to get revenge on the CFP by being better than last year and making it easier for them to put you in the Coppell playoff? No. You're going to win your pack. They're going to try and win their conference again and cross your fingers and hope that you get in again. You get in. Because Ohio State has been the now we've already had two fourths. You know, we've already had two four seeds win the national championship. That's why we needed this college football playoff badly for us, please, because like I said, two teams, Ohio State, when they won, they were a four seed. When Alabama won, fourth seed. So that's why they had none chance to make it to win a national championship in the previous format. So obviously now for Ohio State, it's making sure that your head coach is still going to be your head coach this season, or if he's going to have some sort of suspension to cut into the season at all. We'll find out about that in a matter of days. But I mean, yeah, I was thinking that my storyline for Ohio State would be Myles Haskins getting turnover, Nick Bosa taking over that defense, and being like just like he's being basically the next his brother, and becoming a dominant force in the Big Ten and winning your conference again and trying to get in the conference and getting into the college football playoff, because that's what this team is destined to do, and that's what this program has been able to do, pumping out teams of 10 wins or more, 11 wins, here we go, boom, boom. Boom! National championship. I mean, they won a national championship as a fourth seed with a third string quarterback. I mean, yes, Cardale Jones was very good, but he was their third string quarterback, and they won the national championship. He was also a freshman. All right, going to next is Georgia. Of course, Georgia. This actually. I have to appreciate ESPN and my research. Of course, ESPN. ESPN comes out with these storylines like once a month or something like that. And I try. I'll use them a little bit to kind of shape my talk, and I have ideas of what I want to say, anyways. First, but I mean, this is kind of helping. Just kind of just getting some actual names, because the college football, there's so many names out there. I can't keep track. I got NFL in my head for the fantasy football show. If you guys play fantasy football. I also do a fantasy football podcast on Tuesdays and Thursdays for this. So you could, wherever you find this one, it's probably if you typed in GSMC football into your podcast app or whatever you search to play podcast, just type in fantasy in the middle there, or it'll probably come up anyways when you type in football. And that's also my show over there. That's actually just me. I'm the only one who does the fantasy football one. Jesse and I kind of share the football podcast because he does the regular football show and I do the college football edition of this show. So just letting you know, a little plug, impromptu plug right there, but I'm done plugging my own show. But you know, I have enough names in my head. I can't keep all the names straight sometimes in college football, but this definitely helps. But I do know who Justin Fields is. I know who that is, and he's going to be, I mean, honestly, there's good problems to have. I don't know if this is a good problem. Is this a good problem to have? Yeah, I know having two really good quarterbacks, it could be, I mean, obviously injuries happen, so you don't want to wish anything on the thing you have. It's called more of a safety blanket than a good problem to have, because you want to get Justin Fields on the field, and in order to do that, you might have to either work it out with a two quarterback trick plays or rotate them out, or I mean, I don't want to say wait for an injury, but. Well, how else are you going to get them? What are you going to do? What's Kirby Smart going to do? And if they, I mean, like I said, they could do double passes, or I mean, they could try and see how it's going to work. Obviously, Fields is not going to be redshirted, according to Coach Smart, and it's definitely going to be interesting to see how Jim Chaney gets ways to get Fields on the field. Like I keep saying, and I can have to enunciate it because it's Fields on the field, Fields on the field, Fields on the field. There we go. Five times fast or three times fast. I think it's going to be a way to get a kind of a quasi wildcat where he can run and also be a threat to pass the ball if the running lanes are taken away. All right. Next up, Washington. They lost. Obviously, they have the quarterback coming back. They have a running back coming back. They lost some good key members of their defense. Also lost their top wide receiver in Dante Pettis to the draft. So looking to find a guy who Jake Browning can can rely on this year is going to be key. Obviously, John Ross goes the year before last, and then Dante Pettis is gone. As those were his two guys, those were his main guys throwing the ball to. But I'm sure that you can find somebody. They'll find somebody. Chris Peterson's a darn good recruiter, and he'll get players in there. Washington's a fun. I mean, it's always nice to recruit for a school that is a cool campus and is a beautiful area. I mean, who wouldn't? I know Seattle rains, but you're playing football. You don't care. It rains. Seattle's a beautiful city. Who wouldn't want to go to UW? I mean, you got a brand new redone stadium. I mean, Husky Stadium is beautiful. You're right on the water there in northern Seattle. Beautiful campus. You've got some beautiful Nike gear. Good colors. You got like purple and gold. What's wrong with that? I mean, why wouldn't you want to go to Washington? So, I mean, other than the fact that maybe you're up in Washington, you have to travel a lot. But, I mean, Pac-12, honestly, you're not really going that far. The farthest you're going to go is maybe as Arizona down the coast. So, I mean, or if Colorado, Boulder, I mean, whatever is further. But still, nothing crazy. Probably their farthest they're going to go is to Texas for the first game of the year. But no, just my point is that they're going to get somebody in there, and I'm sure Jake will have somebody to throw to because, I mean, knowing Jake and seeing who he threw to in high school, we had one year where we had a guy who was like 6-something. Everybody else was short, and he was still able to. I mean, his number one receiver in high school was a kid by the name of, he had a bunch of them, but Troy Knox, one year. I actually played baseball with this kid. He was my catcher in high school as well, Troy, and he played slot receiver for Folsom, and he got a lot of touchdowns, their junior year, and I watched him play firsthand. I was right there on the field taking pictures. That was what I did for the newspaper, because I was playing baseball in the baseball season, and in football season I was on the field writing about it. So I mean, this is a guy who will find an opening. He doesn't care. He throws the ball too. He picked out John Ross. Obviously, he picked out Jonte Pettis. Those are two NFL talents right there. John Ross broke the record for fastest receiver. I mean, 40 and a 40 time. I think, did he break the record over like the record? I think he did, like the record. Yeah, and then obviously you've seen what Dante Pettis can do, and I'm excited to see him play for my Niners. So we'll be getting on that in the next few weeks. I think Washington will be just fine. They'll figure something out, but that is their main issue right now in their storyline. Wisconsin, I think they need to navigate their schedule correctly. Also, reshoring up their defense. They got some cornerbacks taken off and left last season. They aged out or got drafted or whatever. So Nick Nelson, Derek Tindall, both have gone as they were those were your top guys. And you're going to have to deal with a sophomore. Obviously, he handled some reps. That was Dante. Kyrie Williams handled some reps. He's going to be coming in. I think he's going to be the sophomore now. But I mean, you lose your two top guys, as obviously the gaps that get plugged in the SEC or in the other your blue blood Big Ten schools really quickly when they leave. That doesn't happen as much at Wisconsin. You have a couple years in between to get guys either coached up or lift, get them to a good weight or right. Playing weight or playing lifting or strength play or whatever it is to get ready to play. But you know, this is going to be a program that doesn't really kind of breed that many players. I mean, at least in the secondary, if it gets linemen, though, they're going to be just fine on the second in the linemen in the pass defense. As obviously last year, they were very good. At the pass defense, but they just they don't have the bodies like they did last year, coached up quite yet. Number seven, Oklahoma. Obviously, I think the biggest storyline is keeping Kyler Murray safe, but I mean, and healthy. I guess it's the A's problem to have, not theirs. But I mean, if you're Lincoln Riley, like I said, you're gonna have. I feel like Billy Beane's gonna be on your line, or maybe the A's, they take a calculated risk and they know what the outcomes could happen, and they're prepared for it. I don't know how. I mean, honestly, I'm just speculating how much the A's could be in contact with the University of Oklahoma, but he's their player. They paid him a lot of money. Kyler Murray did, and well, I want to make sure he's healthy coming off the season. Other concerns of Oklahoma are getting their secondary refurbished as the safety concerns have happened as they've already had to move a corner over to safety, and then also have big guy Brandon Radley Hiles. He was the newcomer of the year in the Big 12 last year, and he's going to be at nickelback this year. So that's kind of your safety / third corner as well. And then we'll get through a couple more here. We'll get through get to the top 10 at Penn State, and you get some obviously that's a lot of turnover happening right there. If they're going to use some true freshmen, we'll see if they're ready. Miami's got to get their offensive line shirt up a little bit more, and then at Auburn, their receiver core probably needs to get a little more shirt up as Jarrett Stidham doesn't really have anybody to throw to him right now. Eric Stove and Will Hastings are both recovering from knee injuries, and there heavily hasn't been a go-to guy in this position for a bit. So Jarrett Stidham will have to make things work with what he's got at Auburn. All right, that'll wrap it up for the show, guys. Everybody, hope you enjoyed this one as I had fun talking to you guys today. As we'll come back on Friday and do another edition of this college football edition of the GSMC football podcast, and then we'll send you out for the weekend. So we'll be back on Friday. Everybody, have a good middle of your week. Happy Wednesday, and I will talk to you later. Bye.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Football Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.